flight session number 10600, Reel 6.
Mr. John Wainwright, Reel 6. We were talking about you, when you first arrived in the reserve lines, and you described them as being well built. What part did you play in the Second Battle of Crissier, which was going on just about that time?
Well, the part that the regiment, the battalion played was in helping to get ammunition up to the front line, I think. Getting up ammunition, that's all I remember about that.
How, were there communication trenches already?
Oh, there were communication trenches, yes, from the redoubt line or whatever it was that we were in, right up to the front line. There were some communication trenches.
And how did you actually carry the ammunition?
Well, it was carried in big boxes, 1,000 rounds of ammunition per box. Pretty heavy, I mean, just carried on the shoulder.
It was a one man per box, was it?
It was a one man per box, yes.
And as a corporal, would you be involved in that?
No, I wasn't involved in it because we're still kept as a signalling section, and we're at that time we were attached to battalion headquarters, so we did not actually do any. We didn't actually carry any ammunition, but the rest of the battalion certainly did.
Now, shortly after the battle, you went up into the front line.
Yeah.
And then you were in the front line until the June the 4th attack, or were you coming back and forth to reserve?
Well, I think we're in the front line most of the time. I think we're in reserve probably for about a week, but it couldn't be more than what from May 6th or 8th. It was only about 4 or 5 weeks before the June 4th battle.
Do you know the name of the front line trench at that time, where you were? Was it?
All I know was to the right of the Crythia Nulla. Because I remember going up the Crythia Nulla and then going in, cutting across there and into communication trench up to the front line.
Now, was this front line, was this as well built as the reserve line had been?
It was quite built. I think I've told you, I think there's the backup troops must have done a marvellous job. And by the time we got into the front line, there was a definite line as certainly on our battalion front all the way along there.
And it was
well sandbagged there, and the wire was there in front, you know, was in front of the line.
How much wire was there?
Well, I can't tell you the exact amount of wire. There seemed to be quite a lot of wire anyway. I mean, it was the normal...
Quite deep?
Quite fairly deep, yes.
And how far away were the Turks? Could you see where they were from your...
We could see their trenches quite well, but there was fair distance, 300 or 400 yards away, I should think.
Were there any features around Bar the Nulla that you can remember?
Were there any what?
Any features around that you could see, any from your trench?
There's nothing at all. I mean, we could just see Crythia, we could see Achibaba, and we could see the village of Crythia, and that's about all. All the ground was this sort of scrubland, and there was precious little to see. The Turkish trenches were straight in front of us, as I say, 300 or 400 yards, probably 400 yards some distance. Of course, later on I should go on to tell you something about getting nearer to them before the 4th of June battle.
I'll come to that, yes. Yeah. I've seen that. Now, did you have any dugouts at all?
There were no dugouts at all that I ever remember seeing anywhere in on the center of the Gallipoli battlefront, in the gully ravine where we were later on. I mean, there were little holes scooped out into the gully side where we used to sort of sleep.
But in the front line,
no, there were no dugouts.
Was that? Did you have little holes scooped out into the side of the trench, or would you just lie on the fire step?
The trenches were properly constructed, and there were communication trenches.
No, but I mean, did you have any cover? Did you scoop out holes in the side of the trench?
Well, there was no need to do that. I mean, there were sandbanks. I mean, you got the trenches down, cut about 5 feet down. And then on top of that, there was sandbags laid over there, and that was the sort of thing that you fired over the sandbag.
I just meant for overhead cover. Did you have any dugouts?
Oh, there was nothing of that sort. No, there was nothing overhead. If a shell came from the top, it came, and that was it.
So where did you sleep?
We slept just sitting on the fire step in the trenches. We just sat down and slept on the fire trenches. We were on regular, in the trenches. There used to be a stand too at night time.
I'll come to that, yeah. Your rations, how did you get your rations? How did they arrive and how were they distributed?
The rations were sent up from the beaches, you know, to be headquarters down there, probably the ASC who were responsible for the rations. And the battalion rations were sent up by mules and so forth, up to behind the line, perhaps to the battalion headquarters, the regimental quartermaster sergeant's headquarters. And from there they were dished out to the various sections.
And your position was with the battalion headquarters, was that right?
It was for a time with the battalion headquarters.
And that
During the time that before the 4th of June, we as signallers seemed to spend quite a lot of time doing our share in the trenches as well, because all that our duties were done by messages by hand from the battalion to the different companies.
But you'd sleep at the headquarters, would you?
When we were there, we'd sleep just at the headquarters. You'd sleep in the...
In the second line?
In the reserve trenches, yes.
Now, this food that came up, what exactly were you getting in that month of May?
Well, there again, the food was issued out from the battalion down to the company quartermaster sergeants, and then that was dished out in sections, in platoons or sections. So our signalling section, we got our share of the rations. So many tins of bully beef, so many tins of jam, one tin of milk for 12 persons, and so forth and so on. Handful of tea, handful of sugar, and handful of salt, and that was the sort of thing that they were decided. Big tins of biscuits, probably about 15 or 20 pounds, I think, I don't know. Of biscuits and so on. They were just given to us, and then it was up to us to make our own arrangements and cooking or whatever we did with them.
What arrangements did you make then for cooking all?
We cooked actually in the trenches. We got bits of wood and bits of firewood. We got some bacon ration too. This bacon used to come in wooden cases. I remember the. Must have been well salted, and the woods, the timber from these things, we used to make our fires in the trenches, and so then we used to boil our water, what water we had, and we used to, if we wanted to do something with the bully beef, we'd make a stew and boil that in a billet tin. If we had bacon, we had the lid of our mess tin, which we used as a frying pan or so forth. And we had our bacon, and so we just had to do it. Probably three or four of it, two or three or four would go together and just share the.
So you'd split it in three or four, and then three or four of you would be in each.
Oh yeah,
group.
Yeah.
The bully beef. What condition was it in? Did the heat affect it?
Well, of course it was pretty. It was fairly coolish when we first arrived there. In the beginning of May, but it soon got very, very hot. In a week or two, it got very hot indeed. And the bully beef, it was reasonable, but it was inclined to be like any meat in hot weather. It would be inclined to be a bit runny sort of thing. Well, I think we had too much bully beef, and if you'd like to know what we did with some of it, I can tell you an instance. Whilst with the first time we had reinforcements to our battalion, by this time I was in the front line as a platoon sergeant. This was after the 4th of June, and we our share in Ireland, we got about half a dozen to my platoon, and some of those chaps that had very, very poor training. I well remember one.
If you stick to the food side,
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Carry on.
Well, the food, as I've said, was I don't think there's anything more to say. We just had, we made the best of it. But we did a bit of experimenting with the biscuits, and we found that by making a sort of grater, that we're taking the lid off the tin lid off the biscuit tin and making holes with the bayonet, made a sort of grater, and we rubbed these biscuits and got a sort of flour with that, and we used to use the bacon fat, and in this we used to make chapatis, and we made something with the bully beef sort of thing, with a bit of this flour rubbed together, and something different. And on one occasion we even tried to make a sort of roly-poly, a jam roly-poly. When we got sufficient of this flour, there were, seemed to be two types of biscuits, I remember. Some of them were the whitish biscuits with a white flour, and presumably the others would be brown flour.
And they were big? Were they
well, they were great big, yes, probably what, 4 or 5 inches square. So these white ones, we found that by rubbing these on the grater, with plenty of time in between our duties and the trenches, on duty and standing down, we got this flour, and we got a sort of flour. I remember when we had the jam, I remember making some sort of a jam roly-poly with this.
What was it like?
Oh, we enjoyed it. I know we used our signalling semaphore flags, I remember, for a cloth to boil this in. There's a little sort of mess in that we had. We had to do it twice, do one side of the roly-poly one and then turn it round and do the other side afterwards. But we were sort of experimenting, things like that, to get something different, because, I mean, the diet was very, very boring. I mean, there was nothing.
So it wasn't the quality so much as the
we had enough of it.
Is the boredom of having
boredom. Nothing beside biscuits and bully beef and jam and this bit of bacon and nothing else.
They had salt bacon, salt. Bully beef has got salt in it as well. Did you have enough water?
Well, water was one of the problems there. I do remember that at times in the front line, I remember probably in one of the communication trenches, digging a hole in the ground and allowing the water to sort of percolate into this hole, and even using that water. It's a wonder we didn't get cholera or something with it, but we always boiled it, I suppose.
How did you get your official water ration?
Well, there were water carts at the base, and if you were at the base, you get your water bottles filled, and presumably the water would be sent up to the line but there are times there we just didn't seem to have any water at all, and I do remember in those early days, we're digging little holes in the trenches, 6 or 7 inches deep, you know, or deeper, and letting the water first settle, and using that for making tea and whatnot, and boiling them. But everybody always boiled it.
What about any other rations? Did you get cigarettes or rum?
Well, there was rum, as far as it was. I mean, rum and lime juice, they came regularly. I found that later on. I was company quartermaster sergeant. Actually, the ration was a 64th of a gallon per man per day, and lime juice was twice that, 120, would it be, 134 of a gallon of lime juice.
How were they doled out in the...
That used to be my job as a company quartermaster sergeant.
I mean, more when you were just an ordinary soldier, because I'll come to the other side of it later.
Oh, well, it was disturbed by the quantity. It would be issued by the quartermaster sergeant. He would get his share for his company, and he would dish that out to the various platoons. And then from section platoon sergeant to platoon corporal would dish this out to the men in the trenches. Well, we got that fairly regularly.
You took your rum ration, did you?
We had the rum, yes, everybody had the rum.
But you actually, you took it, you drank it?
Oh, yes, we used to make rum punch with it, I remember.
How did you do that?
I don't know, just to put some rum, made part of it in, put some sugar in and something or other, and I just had this rum punch, that's all I remember about. Probably had that at night.
But so the officer didn't make you drink it in front of him? No,
I never remember anything of that sort. No.
What about the lime juice?
Well, the lime juice, the idea of that was to prevent scurvy, wasn't it? And that was dished out there, and because it had to be watered down, of course, it was very, very strong lime juice, you know. And it just it had to be watered down, and you used to just drink it if you wanted. Probably if people didn't want it, they'd pour it out on the trench if they didn't want it, I suppose.
What about cigarettes? Did you get a cigarette rush?
Well, I didn't smoke anyway. But I don't remember any cigarettes being issued at all in Gallipoli. Because I know people who did smoke, I mean, they felt it for a time. I remember one of the lads in my platoon, in my section one time, who had a few woodbines and was selling his woodbines at a shilling a woodbine. That soon finished, though. No, we never got any tobacco ration at all.
Any other rations of any sort that you remember?
Later on, we got some sort of desiccated vegetables, dried vegetables, you know, all sorts of vegetables that were, well, they were called desiccated, dried, so, and then used to boil this up and then make a sort of, go with the stew, you know, that sort of thing.
What about washing? Were you able, the water was short, were you able to try and keep yourself clean?
Well, there was not much chance of washing with the amount of water that we had in the front line trenches. And in fact, I mean, we used to shave every morning. We used to shave and probably use the remains of your tea for shaving water.
Did you have to shave? Was that the battalion wanted? I mean, were you supposed to shave, or would you just want to?
Well, when things were fairly steady and there weren't any advances, and it was just the normal duties of 2, 1, and 4 or sort of thing, and manning the trench. I mean, you were expected to be decent, tidy, and be decent and clean, and people just did. They just shaved. I remember shaving each day.
What were the latrine arrangements in that first month?
Well, they were pretty primitive. I mean, it's the old thing there again. There was a pioneer corps and pioneers in every battalion. And then one of their jobs was to make these latrines, or whatever you call them, very primitive, behind the lines, in a sort of off of the communication trench. And all there was just a deep hole trench that's cut along there. I think there was a pole sort of thing that you could squat on. And that's it, and it was just there, and then the stuff was covered with soil and so on. That was it, just behind the line.
Was there any paper issued or anything?
No, nothing. No. No, never anything of that sort.
What about the waste disposal of things like tin cans and just general rubbish? Did you try and keep the trenches clean and bury them, or did you throw them over the side? What did you do with things like that?
Well, I never remember them being thrown about, so they probably went down in the hole of the latrines or something, actually. But there was very little rubbish there. All the tins of bully beef, empty tins and jam tins. That's about all that there would be, really.
And you think they went in the latrine?
I should think that was about as far as they'd be, because you wouldn't certainly have them littering at the trenches.
What about lice? Did lice make their appearance?
Well, it wasn't very long, because the orders were we weren't allowed to take our boots off, even when we were in the communication trenches. We were never undressed at all. So we went on for some months, and we just became lousy. That was just, there's no question at all about it. I mean, the trousers in particular, the lice along all the seams of the trousers, and that was quite an exercise, going with a lighted match or something, going along the seams and trying to kill these things off. But when we were in reserve there, or at rest, a few times we did get right back. We used to go and bathe in the sea, you know. There was always a risk, though, of a shell coming over, because on the Asiatics, on the other side of the Dardanelles, on the Asiatic side, there were some guns at Shanak. We gave it this big gun a name, Asiatic Annie, it was supposed to be. And it was in full view, so if you were swimming around, it was around about W Beach and V Beach, when I remember in particular swimming. Later on, I remember going to the end of the Gully Ravine. But mostly I remember going out to swim round about there. So that helped us too. And we'd wash our shirts too. We'd put them in the sea and then they dried pretty quickly. But there was a lot of time, few and far between. It was only when you were right back behind in reserve,
Did the lice cause a lot of excessive irritation, or could you put up with it? Or?
You just put up with it. So they were just a nuisance, and you just had to make the best of it.
What about flies? Were they a nuisance?
Flies became absolutely a terrible nuisance because, I mean, the conditions in Ellis there, right at the beginning, I mean, there's no question about it. There were dead bodies lying about, and there were dead mules, and dead animals, and dead people. And in cases, there were dead bodies built into the trenches. I mean, I'm not romancing at all. I remember one player going up to the line one time, going up the Carithionella, going up to the communication trench, and there at the end of the trench was a hand sticking out there. You could tell it by the smell sometimes. The people have been they've been buried in the trenches, and that was it. So then the smell and the stench there, you got used to it when you were there on the peninsula. But I remember we went off at one time for a few days to Imbros for a rest, and coming back, and as soon as we got near on this trawler, whatever it was, it's supposed to be coming, when you got the smell coming over there, it absolutely struck you, a foul smell of food, mortifying flesh. And then we were living amongst that for months. So the flies, they were breeding in millions. And if you got a scratch or anything, and on about your hand, a scratch on your hand, the flies are there, you can around your eyes, around your face. We had shorts later on there. We cut down our trousers, actually. The very hot weather. So we had shorts on, bare knees. And they've got a scratch there. Everybody had septic knees, septic hands. They were absolutely terrible.
What about your eating? Did they interfere with that?
Well, they were eating. I mean, they got into your food. You didn't watch it. I remember one time being down at the base, and there was some sort of a regimental cookhouse there. They were cooking something in the Dixies, and you could see flies in the stew or whatever it was. There were millions of them. They were all over the place. You couldn't get rid of them. But those septic sores were the worst. For years afterward, I got them like everybody else, saw the back of my hands and round my knees. And for years afterward, I had these marks of where these septic sores had been. And it was a year before they wore away.
That's one of the... I was moving on to the effect of all these conditions together. Did dysentery, mate, or trench fever, did either of those make their appearance before June the 4th?
Dysentery came pretty quickly. I should think it was probably soon after the 4th of June, I should imagine.
Soon after?
Soon after, yes, because of it. That was the time that it came there. I don't remember much just about the first week or two, but certainly because, I mean, I had dysentery pretty badly, like everybody else. I mean, some of them... Well, I never went sick or anything. I never went sick for anything. We had a regimental doctor somewhere, but I never remember me going to him for anything at all. But he got these septic sores, and you had to make the best of it. I found about the best thing with these septic sores was to put some bacon fat on it, and that seemed to be as good as anything else.
If we look now at the daily routine within these conditions, you said you started with Stand To. Could you just explain what exactly that was?
Well, in the front line, I mean, when it was getting dusk, I mean, that's the normal procedure, that in the trenches, just as it's getting dusk, there would be a stand to. The idea being that just in the sort of twilight, that might be the time there would be a surprise attack. So the probably the Turks were standing to at the same time. And the stand to was for 1 hour. Everybody stood to in the trenches, in the ready on the with their on the firing platform, with their rifles at the ready, in case there was an attack. That was a stand to, and you would stand to, and the order would come round. They always come by word of mouth, so you could stand down. But it was usually, and then early in the morning too, just at the break of day, you had this stand to again. The idea was that was the time there might be a surprise attack. And it was sort of stood to for an hour. And then everybody stood to, and then they just left the two on and four off business. And the other people would get down and start cooking the breakfast.
Now, you wouldn't be part of the two on and four off the system, would you, as a signaller?
Well, I mean, I was only a signaller for a week or two at the beginning of the war. I mean, after the 4th of June, I mean, I was a platoon sergeant. I was in the line all the time.
So, well, okay, we'll leave that, because that'll confuse it. What would you normally do during the day before June? What the daytime activities? After you'd stood to in the morning, what would you do then?
Well, the first thing you do after stand to, as I say, there were still one out of three on the firing step, you know, sort of keeping on. We had periscopes, by the way, you know, where you could sort of look over the line, you know, because you had to be very, very careful there that you didn't show your head too much over the line. The Turks were very good with their sniping and whatnot. And if there was any sign of a head, the bullet came over in no time. So there was one man left on the fire, and the other two were stood down. And that was the time of getting breakfast, having a shave and... I wasn't exactly wash and brush up, but tidy yourself up and get breakfast ready and have your breakfast. And you could see the Turks were doing the same in the line opposite. You could see the smoke coming up from their line. And just to be naughty sometimes, I mean, when we saw the smoke coming up, we used to get somebody would fire a few shots just where it was. But you were only asking for trouble because you probably get some back at the same time.
What would you do after breakfast? I'm thinking before June 4th, really. Well, how did you spend the day?
Well, there was nothing to do. I don't know. You were just in the trench, and you had your duty. I don't remember writing letters or anything like that, because we were so limited to space. I don't know. We hadn't any writing material, and so. I don't know if they didn't have anything very much.
Did you have any duty when you were a signaller just for that month before you got promoted? What would you have? Did you have anything to do in the day?
Well, the only thing was if you're on duty, they were on battalion, and there were somebody sending messages out to the line, the various companies, all by hand, you know, from battalion to company headquarters.
So the signallers acted as runners.
Yeah, they were acted as runners, and we didn't use the telephones or certainly no signalling methods at all. We hadn't the field telephones for that sort of work.
Would you get any sleep during the day?
I don't remember that we ever slept during the day. I don't know. We just carried on. I just can't remember what we did during the day down there.
At night, when you were a signaller, you wouldn't have any. Would you have any part in the sort of wiring parties or reconnaissance patrols, anything like that? Would you be doing any of that in the evening?
No, I mean, as I say, our signalling duties, I mean, they only lasted really a few weeks, and then it was a matter of going into the trenches. I mean, and in my particular case, I mean, after the 4th of June, I'd finished with a signal.
I know that.
Altogether.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about, before June the 4th, you see. What as a signaller, what would you do in the evening?
Well, we just look like the troops. I mean, you were on duty there, and there was nothing to do in the trenches. Yes. After taking up duties in the front line late in May, the line at that time, the front line, was probably something like between 300 and 400 yards from the Turkish line. And obviously it was the intention later on to attack the Turkish position. So it was decided by the powers that be to get the line nearer. So working parties were sent out at night all along the line with the idea of digging a new trench in advance of the original one, of the old one, nearer to the Turkish line, to get nearer.